It's so great to have Todd Bolsinger with us, Senior Congregational Strategist and Associate Professor of Leadership Formation at Fuller. Really appreciated, Todd, your book on canoeing the mountains. And you get such a gift for capturing metaphors that are so helpful. And your next book as well, which I'm looking forward to, Tempered Resilience, also I understand does the same thing. So thank you so much for sharing with us today. I'm also joined today by Sandy Killeen and Gord Cook. And I'm just going to ask both Sandy and Gord just to introduce themselves, if they wouldn't mind, maybe a little bit about yourself and where you're serving. That would be great. Gord, why don't you go first?
I'm here in Fredericton, New Brunswick, and I've been here at the Drive Baptist Church now for 11 years.
That's great. Thanks, Gord. How about you, Sandy?
I'm Sandy. I'm the Associate Pastor of Youth and Family at Rivercross Church in St. John, and I'm very new to it. I just started in January. It's my first pastoring role, so if we're paddling canoes over mountains together, I've never even held a paddle, so this was very encouraging and helpful for me.
And Todd, again, it's really, really great to have you here. And we appreciate the information you just shared with us on adaptive leadership. And so I'm going to ask maybe Gord to go first and just kind of maybe share a question or an insight from the masterclass time that we've just had. And he'll get to just interact with him on that again. That would be great.
Great. Glad to do so. Thanks for having me.
What caught my attention really was, I think I've been in ministry now for 25 years and I've done all the seminars and all the conferences. I've never heard anybody talk about being sabotaged. That just woke me up. I thought, my goodness, he's speaking what I've been living, and I didn't understand it. And so I just wrote down, you said something about stay closer to the people sabotaging you. That sounded wonderful. But everything inside of me causes me to run. Run from everything. When you see that sabotage and those sabotagers, you try to work around it, you try to whatever. Any tips for staying closer to the people sabotaging you?
Yeah, well, first of all, the very first thing you can do is acknowledge just how hard it is. Like the very fact that you know you want to run, like this is like the moment where as a leader, you cannot afford to pretend any kind of piety. You just got to recognize this is terrible. This is why the new book, Tempered Resilience, I tell the story of Moses so much, of just how really hard it was. Right down to like one of the crises of Moses's entire work came after Miriam died and he lost his sister and he lost his sister and then he lost his cool. And almost every one of us can recognize, oh my gosh, we go through these moments when we are not at our best because we are experiencing personal loss. Sabotage is one of those moments where we are looking at the people, the very people who called us to lead them are now getting in the way. Oh my gosh. So what it requires of is just to confront the brutal reality of that and then bring that before the Lord, which is why in the new book, I talk a lot about the spiritual practice of lament as being really central to a resilient leader. But it starts by what you just did, Gordo, which was to acknowledge how really hard it is and that it causes me to grow closer. And then we start recognizing in the scriptures how often Jesus did that, right? How he drew closer to Peter. He drew closer even to Judas. He always was moving closer to people, but he was also moving closer to them with the idea that he was inviting them to accompany him in where he was going in the mission, not to stop what God was trying to accomplish.
I very much appreciated your discussion about Moses, and specifically about Moses experiencing his heart failure. You know, just if these are the people you're leaving me with, then you might as well kill me now. So I wondered if maybe you could speak just a little bit about how we as leaders can protect ourselves from those moments of heart failure.
Yeah. So, you know, so the notion that Ed Friedman talks about failure of nerve, and then I talk about a failure of heart. The failure of nerve is really where we want so much to please the people we're with that we stop the mission. The failure of heart is where we become so angry at the people that we're with because they are stopping the mission that we now disconnect from them. And so what it really causes for us to do is to really come back to our calling. I mean, what we actually have to do is come back to the notion of this is mine to do. And these are the people that God has entrusted to my care. And this is the work that I'm going to do until God releases me from it. And what it requires then is for me to go to a deeper place of loving and staying connected to them. And that is, you know, we just talked about how hard that is. But the failure of heart is really something we have to acknowledge in ourselves. And this is my friend, Jimmy Miotto, is the president for Compassion International. And he once said to me in passing at a meeting, he said, you know, Todd, the biggest danger of doing the work of God is that it often can undo God's work in you. And the part we have to pay attention to is how dangerous to our faith ministry can be if we're not profoundly aware of these realities that we see actually in the scriptures.
Describe to me, you used the term church as a relationship system. Mm-hmm. Now, I was trained in the old institutional model. I think Rob and I came through about the same time. And just flesh that out a little bit as church. What are the key attributes of seeing church as a relationship system?
Yeah, thanks. So here's actually, I'm going to make this more complicated for a moment. I think what makes the church so complicated is that it is a family business. It is both a relationship and it has a mission, right? So it is both inherent, like, you know, a family has inherent relationships. Why do we exist as a family? To love each other and to, you know, pass on the family to the next generation, right? But a family that has a mission or a family that has a business also has a larger calling. So that's what we see in Genesis 12. You know, God calls Abram, through you, through your family, you will be blessed. And then through you, all the families of the earth will be blessed. There's a combination of those. So whenever I talk about this, if anybody's ever been in a family business, like they light up. And this is a really helpful one when you're talking to church members who often them have family businesses or family farms or, you know, like realize this is what's so complicated. Like, you know, my son-in-law is, I love him, but I won't trust him with anything with the business. Right? I'm like, or, you know, that question is what makes it so complicated in a church. So to recognize, first of all, we have inherent relationships. We are brothers and sisters of one another that I happen to believe has been done by God through God's own choosing and election, that God literally gives us to each other in ways that we would never have picked for ourselves. Then we have a mission to do together that is bigger than ourselves and even bigger than our family. And so that combination makes it so complicated, that we are both a family and we have a family with a mission to accomplish, which means the relational dynamics, the emotional dynamics of family, which are always about navigating closeness and identity, what family systems call self-differentiation, your capacity to be to be an individual, to be a person in relationship with other people. That's what a healthy identity, self-differentiated person, then has to function for a purpose bigger than ourselves. And that's what makes this complicated.
That's a great illustration of that. That totally makes sense. Thank you.
Yeah.
So a lot of us are kind of in this position where we're both learning how to change the way we lead and trying to help other people learn to change the way that we lead. So we're leading groups of leaders. And I wonder if you could maybe just speak to some practical steps that we can take to help other people catch this vision along with us.
Yeah. So Sandy, I want to say this particularly as a person, you said this is like your first call and that you're early in your ministry. So here's a big difference between you and say the rest of the three older white guys on call, which is that we were formed in an institutional model that basically said, if you continue to take steps, eventually you'll have influence. What the church actually has to do today is recognize the process of taking steps up the ladder, if you will, is actually taking us back. What we actually need to do is convene and collaborate with people, many of whom have not been trained in our past. So one of the parts we have to do is to figure out how to create environments where you get your voice in the room more and where your experience coming from a different world. Like you said, you never handled a paddle. I actually happen to think that being a really good thing. We don't need you to canoe. What we need you to do is actually help us get comfortable with the fact that there isn't a river. But what we need that to be done is in a way that understands that you bring expertise about the world, the future, just because you've lived in it. And we bring experience and wisdom from having grown and being older. And that combination of expertise and experience is now flipped. It used to be the older folks brought expertise and experience. Younger people had nothing. What I would say is the folks who have been more marginalized in the past actually have expertise. And that they bring expertise and we bring life experience. And it's in that collaboration that we really discover what leadership looks like in the future. And if you do that from your place within structural places of power and structures that you're involved in, like as an associate pastor, you'll also be able to do that with lay people and others when you are the person who comes into the room with more experience and less expertise as that changes. So that's that combination of collaborative leadership that's really important in a changing world.
That's really helpful. Thank you.
So Todd, I'd like to ask you a question. Put on your imagination cap for a second and imagine you're sitting across the desk from a pastor who calls you up and says, look, I think this pandemic is giving us a gift and a chance to rethink some things in our church and how we do them. But when I sit around my board table, I sense there's pressure to just play it safe. Finances might be risky. To use your analogy, paddle harder. What would you say to that leader in that situation?
Well, what you just described is my coaching almost every day. like people call me they call our Church Leadership Institute because they are leaders who want to lead adaptive change. And very often they're facing resistance from their own core people, even their boards. So my answer to that is what we learn in adaptive leadership is you've got to lead the learning. So the first thing you got to do is become curious. And the conversation, the way it's described by Ronald Heifetz and his colleagues, is you get up on the balcony. So have a conversation of both. I mean, he said the change happens by listening on the dance floor and looking from the balcony, right? It's that combination. So be close to people, listen to them, empathize. So I would really want to ask your leaders, tell me why you think going back is a good idea. Tell me why you're focused. Tell me what keeps you up at night. And what you'll find is these are really good people who are afraid their church is going to die. Like you're going to experience the anxiety. Then to be able to ask the question, if we looked at this from a larger point of view, how much of what we're trying to go back to wasn't working anyway? I mean, I work with all kinds of churches that, like, all we want to do is get back to having our worship services, and we want to be able to, like, gather in our fellowship hall and do the stuff we used to do. You know, the stuff that was losing a million millennials a year. Right? The stuff that hasn't been working in like 20 years in most places in the West. We want to get back to that. So instead, could there be an opportunity here? And that's why even the conversation I spent a little bit on in the webinar was, you know, what are the underlying issues that we noticed that were there before that we could pay attention to now? And what would it be like if we were to say that's what we want to come out of COVID? We want to come out of COVID stronger than we were before, better than we were before, paying attention to some of those things. And almost everybody I know has had some kind of experience of that. COVID's been really hard, but there's some stuff we've discovered. Like I've discovered that I don't have to fly 100,000 miles every year. I'll be back on planes again, but I'm not going to be on as many as I used to be. And I don't think people are going to be willing to pay what it took to fly me. like, honestly, I don't think I'd be having this conversation with you guys in New Brunswick if you had to fly me from California round trip to spend a day with you at my rate. But we can have this conversation and I can learn from you and you can learn from me, and I can have a conversation with, you know, we did earlier with an Indigenous person who wants to actually challenge the conversation. I don't get to have that conversation unless we can use this technology. And so this is really important for us to pay attention to what we're getting and learning through COVID, as well as what we're going to make sure we retain and recover.
Right. That's helpful, but it's also so pastoral as we look to be leading at this time.
I've been fascinated by phrases you use, and I've got a bunch of them written down. I've already asked you about a couple of them. The spirit of adventure. And how do we cultivate that either in ourselves or in our congregation? And would there be, can we connect that with spiritual disciplines or our mm-hmm. walk with Christ and things like that that would nurture that a little bit? And how we kind of hand that or nurture that in other people?
Yeah, yeah. So, in Tempered Resilience, I talk about a set of spiritual practices for resilient leaders, and that sense that we need we've all had spiritual practices, and we've also all had the experience of our practices needing to change because of our life circumstances changes. Like, just ask anybody who enjoyed wonderful, beautiful, quiet morning quiet times and then had little kids. Like, all of a sudden you realize, I'm not having an early morning quiet time again until those kids are older, right? You have to change your spiritual practices. I said that I had to, when I became a pastor, I realized I needed way more Bible study than I'd had years earlier, because I needed to be able to have the practice of the deep study of scripture in order to preach well. Same thing's true in this way. A spirit of adventure really is our capacity to reframe our experience, to be able to see it in a new way. So in the book, I talk a lot about moving from a dominant reaction of solving a problem to learning how to see a problem more deeply, getting more perspectives on the problem, see it instead of solve it. Many of us, especially in the Christendom institutional model, were told, you know, it's engineering, it's almost industrial, like see the problem and solve it. And the problem is that most of us aren't actually seeing it very clearly. So as soon as I invite in other voices, you know, I invite in Sandy and I invite in like our friend earlier who was talking, and I invite in a few other people and say, okay, how do you see this problem? And they go, you know, I think it's a totally different problem. Now we've got more voices in the room. And a bunch of the work I do with my doctoral students and in our consulting is actually helping people acknowledge that a spirit of adventure actually starts with seeing the problem differently before you try to solve it with your own method, with your old methods that are now imaginatively gridlocked.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Well, Todd, look, we thank you so much for your time today. If people are looking to follow you on social media or stay connected with you or get some of your resources, how would you direct them?
Well, I'm on Twitter at Todd Boll, T-O-D-B-O-L. You can find me there. And the best place is actually through at the Church Leadership Institute. It's a website URL, Dupree.org/church. Dupree.org/church. It's the Max Dupree Center for Leadership. It's named after Max Dupree. And so it's the dupree.org/church. And people can find me there. And that's where we get resources. And you can get on our newsletter and connect to us from there.
Great. Thank you so much for what you're doing, for your heart, for clergy, for leaders, helping us get better and stay focused. And it was an encouragement, really a breath of fresh air today. Just even talking about things like the spirit of adventure, you know, helped me just kind of say, wow, we can dream again in this season. So it was really, really encouraging. So thanks so much for spending this time with us today, and blessings on your continued leadership as well.
Thank you. Thanks very much for having me. It was really nice.